All right, so folks, we've got a good show for you today. Until the rabbit holes are followed, and I totally get distracted. Our plan is a brief history and overview of Roswell, as well as an interview with fellow Roswellian Guy Malone. Let's get to it. Having recently been displaced due to COVID, with all the crazy life twists and turns that have followed suit, we have unintentionally crash-landed in a town embracing its pop culture notoriety, Roswell, New Mexico. What is reality really like living in Alien Town? From art and music to UFOs and more, tune in while I document our discovery of Roswell on our journey to become full-fledged Roswellians. You're listening to The William Atkinson Show. Let's get to it. All right, so in preparation for the show, I wanted to start with the beginning, and it makes sense then to go back to where Roswell got its name. Now, Wikipedia provides a pretty decent summary of Roswell's early history from a small settlement called Missouri Plaza, which had to eventually relocate due to a lack of water. And this was in the early 1860s. A group of pioneers from Missouri come out. Then they struck their settlement about 15 miles southwest of where Roswell currently is today. They can't find water, so they abandon it. Later, though, from Omaha, Nebraska, comes a businessman named Van C. Smith, and he's got a partner, Aaron Wilburn. They end up building two small adobe buildings in what is now downtown Roswell in 1869. This becomes the town's first general store, and the other one's the first post office. So it's kind of coincidentally interesting that Van C. Smith eventually becomes the town's first postmaster in 1873. In answering where did Roswell get its name, it's kind of anticlimactic in some way, although humbly respectful in another. He names the city after his father's first name, Roswell. I did not know where Roswell got its name until I actually started scratching on this particular issue. So it'd be interesting to know if anybody else knew this before. As I said, this show is about discovering Roswell, and so you're along the journey with me. Moving on, Roswell has a very interesting history going all the way back to the days of the Wild West. Beginning about 1877, 1878, there were two business rivals, a guy by the name of James Dolan, who was already here and pretty well established, and then another businessman coming in, his name was John Tunstall. Now, Tunstall was backed by John Chisholm, and Dolan and Tunstall managed to escalate what should have been just general business competition into what now is called the Lincoln County War. And this drug a good part of this world into a years-long bloody fight, which eventually came to a head with a five-day showdown, a gunfight, kind of like the OK Corral type thing, between these rival factions and their gangs in what it was called the Battle of Lincoln. Now, we'll probably cover this in a whole episode on its own or a series of episodes of the Wild West and Billy the Kid and whatnot. But Roswell reportedly managed to stay quiet while the Wild West was on display here. While it's not my purpose to actually bring to you, you know, just a reading of Wikipedia, which this is largely where I got everything from, okay? Roswell managed to stay kind of quiet through here, but the key is that both Billy the Kid and Sheriff Garrett, or Pat Garrett, were focal figures of these stories. Okay, and you still see them in the city. You hear about them. As a matter of fact, there's a storage unit not terribly far from where I live called Billy the Kid Storage Unit. As an anecdote, a buddy of mine actually lived in Sheriff Pat Garrett's old home. So it's kind of, you know, one of those little things that just gets brought up as we are sitting around the campfire chatting or whatever. So the Lincoln County War ends in the early 1880s. So things die down after a few years with that whole gunfight. And then after this, a merchant by the name of Nathan Jaffa was digging a well in his backyard in 1890 over off of Richardson Avenue. And he taps into this massive water aquifer, which Dad used to call the Artesian Water Basin. So 1890, this guy taps into the Artesian Water Basin, right? And let's be real, this isn't the silky, smooth, sweet water that you might find in a Fiji bottle at your local Minute Mart. It's really hard water. And a little curious factoid that I found while at the Southeastern New Mexico Historical Society off of Lee here in town while doing a bit of archive diving, I was noticing some advertisements that were run in the Roswell Daily Record, you know, during kind of the period of early 1900s. So this in particular, the particular paper I'm thinking of is in July, for none other than bottled water. Yeah. So there's a proprietor in town for the Roswell Bottling Works, run by somebody named G.G. Gilmore. And it says, if the Roswell water does not agree with you, consult the Roswell Bottling Works. G.G. Gilmore, proprietor. Even some of the local establishments advertised drinks being made from distilled water. One particular sequence of ads stood out to me, run by a guy, I'm presuming a gentleman, by the name of E.H. Gamble. And he had this to say: all my drinks are made from pure distilled water. Now, the reason why this particularly stuck out to me is he ran nearly 10 of them in a row. So here's the list of kind of the want ads, right, in the paper. And there's 11 of these things. And I'm going to read them in order so you kind of get an idea or feel for what I'm talking about. Call for Gamble's pure water. Call at Gamble's for pure drinks. Charlie Bond has a very sick baby. Call at Gamble's for pure drinks. Call for drinks made from distilled water. Gamble's for pure drinks. Phone 163. So 163. Imagine, you know, telephones having only three digits. Boy, that would be convenient, wouldn't it? Number 7. Call for drinks made from pure distilled water. Number 8. C.H. Nelson, dentist, rooms 2 and 3, Texas block. 9. T.D. White left yesterday for a business trip to Kenna. 10. Howard Cohen of Hagerman was a Roswell visitor yesterday. 11. All my drinks are made from pure distilled water. E.H. Gamble. So if you know Roswell, you know how hard the water is here. And so while the town was still sitting on a massive underground water aquifer that just exploded into, you know, an oasis of a community here and for population growth and everything else, it still took a bit of getting used to drink that water. And bottled water was not necessarily something that just popped up in the, you know, the modern day history. So I suppose over 127 years, some things don't change. But in the case of Roswell, its population did explode. And then you get the 1890 water aquifer. And then by 1905, the town's just exploding in population, right? So over the course of the several years, the Roswell Daily Record had ran many articles on the issue of the explosion of population, creating a public concern, if you will, about the population growing too fast and whether or not it was sustainable, or if people would eventually end up moving away and the town would be kind of a boom-bust cycle. So one of the other oddities here is that they had some railroad executives come into town, and the railroad executives were saying, yes, we know that your railroad depot is a little small for the community size that you have, but you're growing so fast. If we install one today, just in a few years, you might have outgrown it again. And so we ran into this problem in Las Vegas. So there was some, you know, hesitancy on the railroad to whether invest here or not. Not because the population couldn't support it, but because they didn't know what to anticipate with the population growth and what to invest here. So there's a lot of other interesting little articles that just popped out during 1890 to 1904 that I was able to just find little tidbits of what was going on in Roswell during this time period. One of which was 1896, W.D. Mulkey opens a bike shop in the J.P. White building with about $1,000 worth, and actually it was quoted, $1,000 worth of bikes to purchase or rent, which is about $35,000 in today's money. Interestingly enough, December later this year, a competitive cyclist by the name of Phil Kirchner comes to town. Now, I didn't realize this, but there was a competitive cyclist in the Old West. Like, how interesting is that? You never hear about this type of stuff. It's usually the bandits or, you know, the Jesse James or the gunslingers and the Billy the Kids. Never a competitive cyclist in the Wild West. So that was just kind of interesting. And then 1899, Roswell gets its first orchestra. We'll have an episode on that eventually. In 1899 also, or maybe it was, no, I'm sorry, it was 1892, there was a first of its kind ever in Roswell. A fancy dress ball was being advertised to be hosted at the Hotel Polly. So the Hotel Polly was apparently the only first class establishment of southeastern New Mexico. And it is now, or was, located in what is now known as the UFO Research Museum. Coincidentally, along with kind of high society type stuff, Roswell had an opera house that was putting on legitimate operas. And I'm doing some research to try to figure out where it originates, the type of plays that it put on, but I do know that it put on stuff like Shakespeare, Princess Ida, and a few others. And there's operas as well as just general town meetings and lectures and other things going on at this opera house. So speaking about lectures, there were some astronomy lectures as well as a lecture on the insect kingdom, and all of which were very well received by the population. Well, all but one, anyhow, from what little I could find. This one in particular was an astronomy lecture, and it's recorded that of the 200 people in the audience, two-fifths of them were heckling Professor Howell. So that's kind of an interesting anecdote of, you know, you've got the majority of the town actually trying to enjoy some intellectual stimulation and learn something new, and you've got just under half the town heckling and giving sneers and having all sorts of fun at the professor's expense. So you can imagine that with Roswell experiencing a rapid growth in population, and you have several professors, which are educated people. You've got an orchestra by an accomplished musician being orchestrated, for lack of a better word. You've got performing arts like Princess Ida, you know, so actors, actresses, and such. All of this kind of comes to a head with the conversation that the town needs an education system. And indeed, these conversations were front and center for several pages of the Roswell Daily Record during the time periods that I was just, you know, able to scan in 3 hours. Now I'm going to jump into the 30s, where you see Roswell take the stage in the aerospace. Specifically, Robert Goddard was performing research on rockets here in the surrounding desert. Considering the sparse population, and when I say sparse, you know, we are talking a few thousand people, right? Several thousand people, actually, but highly concentrated in one area. And there's wide open spaces outside of town. So you can launch large cylindrical objects into the sky, observe them, watch them fall to the ground, and not have to worry about them becoming some form of, you know, disaster for a community, as opposed to, say, just outside New York City. So Roswell is an environment very suited to this type of research. And Robert Goddard comes to Roswell. He is credited as being kind of the father of modern rocketry, or specifically American rocketry for sure. And he's credited also with being the individual who was first able to successfully launch a liquid-fueled rocket. Here in Roswell, we have honored him with the naming of a high school after him. And the local museum has an exhibit specifically dedicated to him where you can walk through his a mock workup of what his workshop might have looked like and view a lot of the artifacts, including one of the rockets that he had built. So Roswell is secured in this place of history for aerospace research. And there's a lot of aerospace research that does continue to go on here down at the old Walker Air Force Base. Now, this is 1930s going into the 1940s. Specifically, we're about to hit the elephant in the room, right? The UFO alleged crash of 1947. So it's often said that an event can usher in change. But change is the process that we go through in adapting to the initiating event. And the events that happened in 1947 are a quintessential example of exactly this. The crash of Roswell in 47 actually occurred north of here, several miles, like 50 miles or so north of Roswell. And this event in 1947, July of 1947, spawned a cultural shift within Roswell, but it took nearly three decades for this change to actually happen. Specifically, the crash largely disappeared from any public conversation. including here in Roswell, until the mid to late 70s. And during that 25 or 30 years in between 47 to, you know, mid 70s or so, Roswell continued to exist and evolve with the culture independent of 1947. We went through the Cold War. We had Walker Air Force Base, 309th Bomber Squad was here, some B-52s, and then it closes down in 67, almost a 15% drop in population. So there's a lot going on during this time period and a lot of culture issues, and you know, it still impacts the way of life around here. For now, the important thing is Roswell's got this pre-1947 and post-1947 culture. There's a brewing period between 47 and the mid-70s where the post-culture actually takes place. And during that 30 years, a lot is going on. But the dichotomy is really important to understand Roswell. And there's no other way to really describe it, except for this one little display that I've seen here in town, and it's right outside of the Western Hotel off of North Main, almost across the street from the Home Depot. And the juxtaposition of Roswell's culture is very well stated here. You've got an old wagon, you know, like a mule or a horse would pull, being driven by an alien, and it explicitly shows in a visual fashion Old West alien controversy. And that's Roswell. So Roswell can boast of some very unique events, such as the alleged alien crash here, and then also being front and center of modern rocketry research with Robert Goddard. And so when I say modern, I'm, you know, talking 1930s modern, but still, there's that. And then we have a massive amount of agriculture that comes out of here. Pecans, for example, and dairy. Those are two really big industries here. So we're going to end this segment with this. As with any community or people, we share a past. And it doesn't matter if we're born into the community or just adopted by one. Their past shapes our present experience. And through our experiences, their past in many ways becomes our past. Now, it can be enjoyable, as very interesting as it is, to learn about this history. But perhaps more importantly, we need to recognize that we are the agents of history that is currently unfolding right now for the next generation. So let's make our future an exciting history worth learning about. So that's the end of this segment. We're going to move over into our interview with Guy Malone. So we have him here in studio. He moved here from Nashville, Tennessee, and has become a substantial active participant in Roswell's community in many ways, one of which is his recent run for mayor. And just that alone is a great example of how one individual can impact a community and help shape its future, even if in a small way. Guy Malone here is best known for being an author of the book Come Sail Away, UFO Phenomenon and the Bible, as well as an organizer for Roswell's Ancient of Days conferences, including speakers with biblical perspectives on the UFO and alien abduction topics. He serves on the board of both the Roswell Galacticon, which I think is fantastically cool, and also the Roswell Community Little Theater, where I'm also an active participant there to some degree. Guy and I actually participated in a play called Unnecessary Farce just last October. It was a blast, and that's actually where I met you, Guy. You've earned 3 certificates in digital currency, and you work at home as a copy editor for Bitcoin Magazine. So thank you for taking time out of your day to show up here in studio. It's great to have you.
Honored to be here. Folks, you got to know, this isn't just a normal rinky-dink off the seat of your pants podcast that Will is launching here. I've done some interviews before over cell phone or, you know, Zoom calls and stuff like that on various topics over the couple decades that I've been here. But yeah, I mean, you got the boom mics for each of us, headsets filtering out noise already, the mixing board. Will is all in on this, folks.
You're too
excited.
Kind.
I'm honored to be kind of ground level with you launching this off together.
Well, thank you.
You're launching. Yeah, I just happen to be here. It's not together, but
well,
good job, sir.
You are the first guest that we've had in studio, aside from my wife. She was sitting right there just the other day, working from home, actually, telecommuting. And this particular house has been in the family for 3 generations now. My parents inherited from my dad's mother, who passed away in 2010, and grandpa bought it for the family in the 50s. And the house was built in the late 40s. So the house has really been in the family for quite some time. And I've dad's recently done a lot of work and remodeled, redid the roof and everything. And then I rewired this whole half of the house, specifically this room, to count for the studio. And so I put in the brand new windows and everything just to ensure that the studio was well suited for this purpose. So thanks for coming in. And you are too kind, Guy.
Yeah, appreciate being here. Before, you were talking about the history of Roswell. I just made a note to myself. I wanted to drop something on you that I learned when I moved here in 1999, that I happened to attend the same church as Roswell, New Mexico's official historian at the time. And this is 1999. He was quite gray himself at that time. He's now deceased. But if you go, I think you know quite a couple of people at the Historical Society here, the Southeastern New Mexico Historical Society.
Yeah, that's down off of Lee, right?
Correct, exactly. Yeah, you'll see some pictures of Elvis Fleming up there. He was, whether president, he certainly probably wasn't the founder, because it's been around a while. But just as an oddity, you mentioned like those two guys that they had a business, a little rivalry going at first, and the official history does start, I think, with the post office and the general store were the first buildings in Roswell. And this may have to do more with, you said, like the town had to move the location because of water supply.
Yeah, so that's like Missouri something, according to the best that I can find online, right? There were some pioneers from Missouri that came in, and it was about southwest of here, 20 miles or so, and they couldn't find water. So they kind of lost that settlement. They had to relocate. At least that's what I understand.
Hmm. Well, he dropped for whatever reason, whether it's just a story he liked to tell frequently or whether he just liked me and I'd find it interesting, is that the official historian of Roswell, New Mexico, Elvis Fleming, told me this story. And for context, you may remember the TV show Roswell that was, I guess, on the WB, more of a teeny bopper.
Yeah, it's like a drama, young adult type thing. I remember watching that.
Yeah, that came in the late 90s as well. It's been revived. There is a current one now. But just for context, that program, I guess the WB or CW, whoever they were back then, he is the person in Roswell, New Mexico, that they came to for some authentic artifacts.
Ooh.
Like when you watch the pilot episode of Roswell, which honestly I have not, but this is what Elvis told me, is that some of the photographs on the wall and some of the memorabilia that defines the sheriff's office, Elvis could point to it in his office or somewhere in the museum. And he told me they borrowed this. I gave him this. I gave him this. So I'm only saying that to give you a little context for who he is in town. Like if you're Hollywood and you're coming to Roswell and you want some authentic historical stuff, he's who you're going to get sent to. And again, so in the 1999, he told me that the unofficial, untold, but true history of Roswell is that the first two buildings here, or the first two people here, the real businesses that launched what we now call Roswell, New Mexico, was two prostitutes who set up a building on what was called the cattle trail between Texas and California, where when the cattle ranchers were annually, they'd make this, I don't want to say stampede, but they had to make this trek to from Texas to California.
Yeah, the cattle drives.
Sell their cattle drive, thank you. And that when they came back, before they got home to Texas, these two girls, as well as a casino, so it's two buildings, one was a prostitution house and then one was a casino, they set up shop, so to speak, to capture the money from these nouveau riche cowboys that had worked all year as raising cattle. They'd gotten it, they'd sold it, and now they've got, you know, they're rich, you know, at least for several months or until next year. But that he said that, he told me that Roswell was first founded, not quite settled, but that it was a casino and two prostitutes. A house was actually how business started right here in Roswell.
Interesting.
And yeah, I mean, he says it's a true story. They won't put it in the history books. It's not what they like for whatever reason.
Sure. I mean, considering the community and the conservative environment that you're at here, that would be a bit of a black eye to the reputation of
perhaps, yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting that you bring this up because recently I went through the whole series of King of the Hill. So all 10 seasons or 13 seasons or whatever it was. And, you know, it's based in Arlington, Texas. And the family, Hank Hill and stuff, find out that Arlington was started apparently by exactly the same situation that you just brought up, a brothel.
Really?
Now, of course, this is in shows, you know, of a, you know, adult cartoon Simpsons kind of environment. I don't know any of the validity there, but it like shocked the town. And there was this whole controversy about it in that episode. It's really interesting that Roswell actually had that origin story, apparently.
Based on the official town historian just telling me, showing me around, getting to know me when I'm new in town, that's what he told me. And it's kind of funny in the sense of, or it's almost, it overlays with our modern day in the sense of, I've heard people over the years, they talk about Roswell, what's the redemptive purpose, like why Roswell exists. And you know, like how even with modern vehicles, we're 3 hours away from pretty much anything. Not yeah. counting Ruidoso, Artesia, Carlsbad, smaller towns in this vicinity. But as far as if you want to fly out of an airport, you used to have to drive to Albuquerque yep. or to El Paso mm-hmm. or to Midland.
Yeah,
we
so
do have a good airport nowadays that flies out.
We are certainly 3.5 hours from any major metropolitan area, driving 3.5 hours. Now, you know, imagine just horse and buggy. Right?
That's what I was going okay. for. I was trying to picture that.
And so as a result of that, Roswell, we kind of briefly touched on this in the previous episode about how Roswell became a cultural hub of this part of the world because of its unique isolation.
Yeah.
And through that, it developed a unique culture in many ways that was independent or distinct from places like Albuquerque or El Paso or even Lubbock.
People have told me, people that you would, the word is intercessors. That they say the redemptive calling of Roswell is to be an oasis and a hub for refreshing, for refreshment. And you could see it as you need somewhere to sleep, you want to eat, this, that, the other thing, you got to refresh. We even today, we still see that. People that are driving, you know, we have more hotels per capita than probably most places yeah. in the country ever will, no matter how large or small their population
yeah,
is.
Go right up Maine, it's hotel after hotel after hotel, and you know, they're actually reasonably nice hotels, and then there's some that are run down and whatnot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're 29, 39.
Yeah, but they're all busy. Like, there's right. all year, all round, Roswell, in many ways, feels like it's a drive-through town.
Correct. Yeah, as a hub for refreshment and an oasis, like, in your journey kind of thing, the picture I find it interesting, especially when I overlay the modern version of Roswell, is that it's a place you stop for refreshment, but the town's origin, what you found was a casino and a brothel that they were just ready to take your money. They were going to give you an excuse to spend it. And then today,
providing entertainment.
Well, entertainment and other things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, their goal wasn't, hey, you need a, hey, traveler, you need a good night's sleep or you need a meal. It's in the sense of, yeah, we got that too, but we're going to take your money through these other means. You know, we're glad you're here to spend it. And I honestly believe that spirit still is here today because we have all these, the interest in Roswell, the UFO crash, the 1947 interest, where you have, you know, weary travelers coming from all over the world here. And in some cases, I say there's two classes of tourists in that sense. There's people that are here for fun and giggles and they want pictures for their Facebook. So they want all the imagery and, you know, the alien and the UFO crash and all that stuff that they can pose in a picture for. And there's also, I'd say, a smaller percentage that comes here for truth. And you can visit a couple places and talk to a couple people here. Like, you know, I have a book on the history of the 47 incident, but the default setting for someone that lives here, especially if they run a business in Roswell, is not to tell you the truth. 99% of the people, I think in the year you've been here, you figured out, they don't have a strong opinion on the 47 incident or whether aliens exist. You know, it's all a bunch of, well, maybe, or it could be, or I don't know. And my grandfather said this, and he was a good man, and I believe him versus other things. But the bottom line is, we're happy to sell you a T-shirt. You know, I can't answer those questions for you is what you get a lot downtown or maybe. Or
you think they're trying to play the fine line to where they don't isolate themselves from a particular crowd of believers versus non-believers?
I don't think most people have bothered to do enough research to have a strong opinion, honestly. It's not everybody's favorite topic of interest.
Well, yeah, sure. And that's, you know, one of the things that I brought up in the previous show is that Roswell is more than 1947.
right? Yeah. My father grew up here. He was born in 48. So obviously there's the whole, you know, pun on the birth riddle. He shows up, you know, just after because he was born March, actually, of 48.
Pretty close.
So that's almost 9 months, after, right? So
insert pun here. Yeah. Al Gore. There's
Oh, there's a number of them. And, you know, I've even joked that I'm from Pluto.
Yeah.
That, you know, I've got, you know, extraterrestrial roots, right? From that perspective, mom and dad grew up here in Roswell. And I remember as a kid, I asked him, you know, so, you know, what's with this Roswell alien crash and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I'm a little sprout, barely even coming into the world in many ways, you know, like 12, 13, 14 years old when I'm asking this. And he said, you know, growing up, we never heard anything about it. It just wasn't part of the conversation or nothing. And he said, I didn't even really hear anything about something like that as a serious topic of conversation until after the service when we were out on the West Coast. And suddenly it becomes this big controversial topic, you know, with the incident and everything else.
Dan, I think the people that are wanting, that are genuinely curious, that they're looking for the truth of what happened, you're the response of the town, and I mean, as a whole, the 99 percentile is sell you a t-shirt and I'm sorry, I can't answer those questions, or I don't have an opinion, but here's where you could go to find out more. Just, I don't want to commit to it, but I'm glad to take your money. I've noticed through long conversations late at night and Denny's and coffee and this, that, the other thing is that story that Elvis Fleming told me about the Oasis, the cattle trail, and then the, you know, a good place to drop some money. It just seems that spirit, that attitude is still here. There's the competition, not even a strong competition, but it's like, we'll take your money. And yeah, we'll also offer you some refreshment or this, that, the other thing, to where the calling of Roswell, I think, is to really just be an oasis to refresh people physically, spiritually, mentally, whatever you want to say. It just, I've heard that conversation a few times, and then you contrast it to where, but really, we're in it for the money.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you do bring this up. I remember taking my daughter to the park over there at the aquatic center. Off of college, just going out. And then we were also down at Spring River Trail. And I often see this elderly Hispanic gentleman, and his name's William, of all things. Mm-hmm. And he's there with his granddaughter. And, you know, he and I got to chatting several times, actually. And one of the things that got brought up was, you know, how'd you come to Roswell? Okay. And so I told him our story and he told me his, and he goes back several generations to the turn of the century, 1900s, when his grandfather was in Texas, was told, you need to go to Roswell because it's, you know, this oasis of a community right on the Pecos River. And I don't remember if he used the term oasis, right? But the draw was the water that was here.
Wow.
You know, so you got the Pecos River and then there's the artesian wells that had just been discovered in the late 1800s. Right. And so there's a plethora of water here in the middle of nowhere. Right. And so that was a massive draw. And, you know, right after, so some of the research that I've been doing on the population growth and everything of Roswell is right after the artesian wells were discovered in 1890 something. I spoke about it earlier in this episode, actually, there was a massive boom in the population of this area. And by 1904, I was reading an article in the Roswell Daily Record, you know, going back through the digital archives, they were expecting Roswell to hit 100,000 people by 1910 or 1920.
Whoa.
That's how fast this little area was growing. And it makes perfect sense from the perspective you had an abundance of water. There was an abundance of land. Okay. You were right in the middle of all the cattle trails going from Texas to California, like what you had even mentioned. And so the town was very agrarian. You can grow fruit here and nuts. I mean, there's a massive amount of pecans that come out of this area, as you know. And so it was like this oasis in the middle of the desert. So it's interesting that your take from, you know, the official town historian fits that, you know, it becomes this business, economic, cultural hub and more here just in this little, you know, well, let's face it, the middle of nowhere.
Podunk little BFE.
Yeah.
You know, now you probably have heard people, it's actually a t-shirt downtown that says, I didn't realize Roswell was this big.
I mean, yes, absolutely. My wife and I just spent our 10th year anniversary out in Ruidosa about 3 weeks ago. And we were coming back in, we crest the hill and there's just all the lights.
You saw the lights, didn't you? Yeah.
And, you know, we're coming in at like 8 o'clock at night, you know, just after sundown. And you know, I'd seen it coming in off of 380 from the east side. You know, you come in, you can see, but there's it's spread out 20 miles.
Right. Even like you said, 3.5 hours away from any major center, middle of nowhere. And then all of a sudden it's pretty, you just weren't ready for, this is not a small town. It's,
no.
It deserves the designation of city. I don't know if breaking 50,000 in population is the legal designation for the difference between a city or a town.
Yeah.
But I know, well, you know, we have the official city of Roswell, so websites and all that stuff. Yeah, a little bigger than people think, and it's different. People say that quite often, that it's different from what they expect when they get here. Just little more business, hotels, strips, as far as, you know, things to do. Actual large neighborhoods, a pretty decent population. 20 years ago, I remember, like I told you, I came here in 1999. I'm glad that you mentioned the pecan. That's funny that you mentioned that, because I remember living in Nashville. I was kind of studying Roswell, not so sure that I was going to move here or not. I don't know why it grabbed my interest at the time. We can do that in a later story, or a later interview podcast or whatever like that, talking about the book and what really the whole mission getting me here and such. But I just remember being impressed as someone, I actually owned a couple of websites and helped people, 1997, 8, 9, the internet was still pretty new.
Yeah. This was before the .com burst.
True. Yeah. I would help people with their domain, or I'd point them to the right places for website hosting. And, you know, a friend of mine built a couple things. He built his own, helped me with mine when I put my book online. Before my book was ever a book, it was a webpage in the 90s. And I just remember being very impressed. I was trying to find out more about Roswell. There wasn't much on the internet, though, about it. But there was pecan.com.
Interesting.
Yeah, the pecan farmers here, you know, it's huge. It's a big industry here. But I was like, I just remember being impressed. Oh, someone in Roswell had the foresight to get pecan.com.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're more agrarian than people believe. I don't think people on the outside are ready for that as well. First, they're surprised that there's more of a city than they believe. And the tourism, the UFO museum, all of that phenomena has a lot to do with the money in town. But when I was actually I used it as a PowerPoint, Chavez County, that's the name of our county, Chaves.
Mm-hmm.
But ChavezCounty.net talks about the business, and we're way more agrarian than people believe, is that the agriculture is listed, like ranked in order of bringing more money here than the world famous UFO tourism brings here.
Yeah.
It's not like one's any better than the other. It's just statistically speaking, our agriculture. So we've talked about pecan. Something that people don't know is our dairy.
Yes. That surprised me. Okay. So, you know, my family's from here. Dad had always mentioned that there was a large agrarian thing growing up, you know, that we had fruit trees and all this other stuff. I've even got an apricot tree in the back.
I had a peach tree in the first little place I rented when I moved here.
Yep. Grandma had a peach tree here and eventually died. And we have a pecan tree in the back. Okay. Everywhere around town, on my bike ride, I see pecan trees. I mean, it's massive. My dad went to high school with the guy who owns all of those pecan orchards back up there, or one of them. But you mentioned dairy, right? I didn't realize until I started digging into some of the numbers about, you know, in preparation for the show, Roswell produces 1.4 billion pounds of milk a year.
Yep.
It's huge.
Spoiler.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, some days you can get that whiff in the air of the dairy farm.
Right. It's yes. The people will say often it's the smell of money, but the more relaxed pun of it is smell our dairy air. You're right. When the wind is blowing a certain way on a hot day, the fact that there's, I think, 60 businesses registered as dairies in the county.
Well, we have a cheese factory here.
Right. Yeah. Leprino Cheese, if they run 24/7 or 7/24 shifts. And what you got to know about Leprino Cheese, it's not a brand name that you and I or anybody listening can go into your grocery store and buy off the shelf.
No.
Their customers are like Pizza Hut and Papa John's.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the number I was giving, that they process just from our local cattle that lives here, you know. They process over 1 million gallons of milk per day, We're a lot more agriculture. I think that's the point between pecan, green chilies, cheese, dairy. Uh-huh. People, they see the sci-fi and the silver and the soap opera drama of the teeny show.
The UFO McDonald's.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That pictures right. all over the internet.
Yep.
Great marketing on Nick Snowberg's part there.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. What's really interesting, though, you know, is from the dairy perspective and the agrarian thing, my grandfather was a cattle rancher. A cowboy here in Roswell before the 40s. He was, as I understand it, and I could be wrong, he was the guy that was running the cattle end of corn livestock back in the day. And then he got his ranch just east of town up on the bluffs, just, you know, going out towards Bottomless Lake State Park off of 380. Okay, so you crest the hill, go out about a mile, and then you can cut over to the Bottomless Lakes. Well, as you're looking east from, you know, that was all his. He either leased it from the federal government or owned it. He was, you know, cattle ranching, and that's what Dad did growing up, is helping on the ranch and stuff. And I've even got a book over here that we talked about, you know, the Rock House Ranch by Barbara Corn Patterson, who talks about what life was like in the 30s and the 40s on a cattle ranch. And she still, the book was published 2002, and she was living here at the time and still owned and operated and maintained the brand, the Lazy A Ranch, the Lazy A brand. But
you do see a lot more of blue jean cowboy boots and hats here.
Yes.
Whether you're in Walmart or a restaurant or whatever, than anywhere. I came here from Nashville, Tennessee, and yeah, Nashville is known for country music, and people are wearing hats and boots there all the time. They ain't never rode a horse in their life,
though. A lot of them, yeah.
Yeah, it's for show. It's fashion.
Yeah, here, legitimately, I mean, you can go down to the, what's that farm that's going out towards Dexter? They do the pumpkin patch thing during Halloween and stuff.
Graves Farm.
Graves Farm, right.
And the corn maze, right.
Yeah, you can go out there, and you legitimately see legitimate cowboy farming individuals helping, you know, bringing in all the pumpkins or something from the trucks. And then there are people that you meet up at Walmart. It's really cool. But going back to my grandfather, what really the story or the anecdote that I was bringing into that is, you know, the cattle auction that's over here off of Atkinson, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So grandpa helped build that when it first came into town. And was
a street named after y'all?
Well, I don't know for sure. but yeah, grandpa helped, build that. And, you know, when it was first going in, he was part owner. He had an interest in that business. So, the agrarian culture here is still dominant. It's still present. We are a farming community in many ways. And, folks, I've even mentioned this before, you know, with the 1947 incident, the juxtaposition of Roswell culture being part of this sci-fi UFO phenomenon thing going on versus the agrarian Old West style life, right?
We haven't even touched on oil and gas yet.
There's
a huge moneymaker here for the region.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it's really cool. And there is more to Roswell than UFOs.
Yeah, that's industry-wise, it's a lot more blue-collar, I think, than people would realize. How much agriculture or agrarian we're talking about shapes the culture and the families, the lifestyle here. The sci-fi, the futuristic, that's not part of most people's everyday here. Would you agree?
So far, my experience has been just that. I mean, in many ways, you have to go looking for that, as opposed to it being part of a conversation that you run into with people at the park.
Someone comes to town, a friend or relative, of course, they want to go to the UFO museum. So, okay, now it's on your radar for the day, but...
Isn't that the way all tourism is in, like, New York City or Seattle or anywhere?
The Statue of Liberty, yeah.
You know, yeah, it's like, we never do these things until people come to town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is stuff they made you do in elementary school kind of thing. That reminds me, you mentioned the word anecdote, as far as the way the agrarian culture fits, just one of the first, like, big slap-in-the-face welcomes I got to Roswell was I looked for a couple different jobs. I actually applied to the Roswell Daily Record. In fact, that was
interesting.
The first place I went looking for work here. Anybody that you know is like got even more than a decade of their life that's spent in the restaurant industry, in the back of our mind, in our hearts, we're always looking for that real job we're going to get whenever we grow up.
Okay.
So I actually, for those you mentioned, you know, what were some of your expectations. I think we talked about is that people have expectations when we move here, when we visit here. Something that was different for me, I was hoping, I'd say I was in my early 30s then, when I moved here, to get out of the restaurant industry and, like, you know, small town. All right, this is easy. I got this. I'm going to go to the news. I'm an excellent writer. I have awards for writing in the past. Okay, and I brought them samples. And, you know, rather than be a waiter or bartender, I wanted to, okay, I'll apply to the newspaper to become a writer. And all they could say was, you are an excellent writer, but sorry, you don't have any newspaper experience. It's no. And another, I was into the web in the late 90s. Not because I'm that techie, but mother necessity and all that stuff. I wanted, when I first, like the book that you have now, like I told you, it started out as only a website. It looked pretty much like a GeoCities thing. But the story I told you, that when I found about pecan.com, I realized, you know, there's all kinds of businesses in Roswell that need a website. So I went to the internet service provider here. This is back when 20 years ago, 1999, or more than 20, again, welcome to not living in a big city. Here's one of the, a couple of the changes you run into in Roswell, is there was one internet service provider. It was not AOL or AT&T
really,
or anything like that. It was TrailNet, a little building on 2nd Street near the chamber, where you had to walk in and, hi, I'd like to sign up for internet service. And their answer is, okay, we'll get that going for you in about a week.
Okay.
I'm a city boy. You don't, weeks don't exist to city boys. But work-wise, I was like, I had this vision. I had all these ideas. You know, we could build, you could host on your site. I could go out and be a salesman for, you know, what I'd call business card websites, just to where you just, at least when people ask you, what's your website, you don't look at them and say, I don't have one, because you're an idiot, you know. And he agreed with me that it was a good idea, but he didn't think there would be enough business at the time, people interested in the web even, to bring me as an employee or even want to have me doing it, repping it. But kind of the welcome to the shock factor was, number one, any service was going to take a week to get it turned on. They weren't in a hurry. They didn't have competition. That kind of dovetails into where I went to church. I became easy friends with a guy named Joel, who was the worship pastor and the youth pastor combined. But he was a Californian transplant himself. And something I've occasionally had reason to share with people when I first moved here, the advice as an outsider acclimating city boy that I was, the advice that an acclimated Californian city boy gave me here was, he pulled me aside. I got to tell you two, and they're not huge. I don't mean to build it up too much, but he goes, two things you have to know about living here is that, number one, the levels of customer service here are horrendous. Anything you need in town, there's really only one of them. They don't have competition. They probably won't greet you when you walk into the door. You're going to have to walk around and look for someone, probably. And it turned out back then, over 20 years ago, that was very much true. But the reason he said it to me was he goes, he said that he wasn't prepared for it. And he goes, as a Christian, I want to prepare you for this, because it's really going to try your patience, and you're going to find yourself getting really angry fast. And I'm just giving you a little heads up to check yourself, so to speak. And when I did a conference a few years later, what was it, 2005, I wound up turning around and giving that same advice to the people that were coming in here. And sure as shoot, one of them, I mean, this guy's, you know, a pastor, teacher, you'd know him as a shiny, upstanding Christian. He came back to me and said his breakfast experience was, he was about to raise his voice and go off on someone, and my little warning came, all of a sudden came back in his mind. He goes, I'm so glad you warned me, because I was appalled at the apathy or the customer service. And again, things are a little better now. We've modernized. That was 20 years ago. But as far as a shocker in a town is that there's no competition. There's only one of what you need, to where one thing that you had to get used to was goodbye city life. Green Acres, we are here. If you want your internet turned on, it's going to be a week.
You know, that's one of the surprises that I had, you know, after about 6, 8, 9 months here, is not so much a lack of interest or apathy or attitude in that regard at restaurants or going in to, say, Walmart or somewhere else, you know, just general shopping. I mean, Roswell tends to be pretty friendly, to at least our experience has been. But one of the things that I did find quite interesting, and maybe you can comment on this, there seems to be a completely different view on work ethic here compared to some of the larger cities that we've lived in, like Portland or Seattle or Austin.
Yeah, the it's all a little lower here.
Yeah.
It requires, you just have to realize I'm in a small town and you develop patience and then you forget about it. For you and I to have a conversation, both being transplants and talking about moving here, is when it comes up. But eventually you don't notice it. I don't walk into Walmart or any restaurant now disappointed or anything. And actually, a lot of those issues have been addressed. One of the more famous reasons was, for a town, you know, trying to get businesses to move here and settle here, we, I'm going to say 2000, 2001, probably not even 2002, but it's one of my early memories here, is that that factor came up because 1-800-Flowers was looking at putting a call center here.
Mm-hmm.
I think the number, and again, you'd have to dig through the old Roswell Daily Records digital archives, but I think they wanted to have 900 jobs here, just answering the phone and directing people for 1-800-Flowers.
I mean, that's 1% of the population.
Right.
Yeah.
Way, a little more, I think. And but they sent all their people here to do their corporate due diligence. And they stated, like in a survey with the Chamber of Commerce, they listed the reasons why they did not choose Roswell. And that lack of customer service was right at the top of the list. That when you have your corporate execs or, you know, your people that move here, but they said that they purposely, as a test, they walked in 9 businesses and only one of them acknowledged them or greeted them and offered to be helpful upon entry. No surprise, it was where I worked, Cattle Baron Restaurant. You know, we were smarter than the average bear. I'll give a shout out. Good place here in town. But that was a wake-up call, I think. And again, I'm going back 20 years with that story. I don't want to give people that are thinking about visiting Roswell, oh, well, man, that sucks. I don't want to go there.
Yeah, so, you know,
it's been addressed.
I would agree with you. You know, Roswell's friendly. I haven't had problems with customer service at any of the businesses that we've shopped at or been into or whatsoever. And the general work ethic here does appear to be different, but I don't think it's worse or better. It's just, it's a smaller community. And in a large part, Roswell, I think, being as unique as it is, provides an experience that, you know, does allow you to exercise certain qualities of your character that you might not necessarily need to in a larger city.
Yeah, whether you're patient or whether you're kind or, you know, whether you put up with people or not, might actually, you might find out something about yourself on one of your first things here.
Well, and then, of course, that is part and partial of living in a little smaller of a community than a larger city, right? Is when we do go someplace like the Liberty, right?
Yeah.
You run into people that you know.
Yeah, I saw you and Olga there. You see someone you know almost everywhere. We're living in Nashville when I grew up. It's like, if you saw someone you went to high school with in Walmart, it was like an occasion.
Yeah.
It was like, wow, great, da-da-da-da-da-da. Like, you lit up, and now it's like, you can't get away from anybody and everybody that you know.
Nope. So coming out of moving here, those early years, right, and experiencing Roswell as you did, how was your evolution of your viewpoint on Roswell in the first 10 years? Because you've been here for about 23 years, yeah?
Yeah, minus 5 years. I moved in 1999, so you're right with your math, except that I did move away in 2010. Got weary and well-doing or whatever. Wanted more, you know, bigger job, insurance or whatever, so I went to Orlando. Didn't work out. Went back to Nashville for a bit where I grew up and then wound up back here. So I've been back since 2015. Thankfully, the same restaurant took me back. Oh, can I tell an odd story?
Please do.
Another thing, just to give you your listeners and you the difference of Roswell. This could happen today, and I'm sorry. It's going to sound a little sickening, but I don't. But occasionally, we were talking about all the dairy and the agriculture and the cheese and the milk and the cows. Well, cows produce cow patties, and cow patties attract flies. Okay, so every now and then there is in Roswell, you know, it seems like there's too many flies in the air.
Yeah.
But one of the shockers, I think I've started to tell this story and I sort of derailed myself going down memory lane, was as a waiter. this woman. I bring her her Cajun chicken Alfredo is what it was, actually. And I a second later, she calls me over.
Oh, no.
There's literally a fly on the side of her plate that she picked out of it. Right. And I'm like mortified. I'm like, oh, my God. And I like reach with both hands to take it away immediately. And she just puts up her hand like and dismisses him. She goes, no big deal. She says, I'm a dairy wife. I've probably already eaten three today. Whoa.
Well, I mean, yeah, and that's, you know, part and parcel of learning the community that you're in, right? There's just certain levels of expectation of knowing the nuances of life in, well, I don't know, Seattle. It's our experiences in Seattle was different than our experiences in Austin. There's a different culture, different environment, different people. Not just your own routine, but just knowing the situation that you're living in. And here in Roswell, yes, because we are an agrarian society and there is a lot of dairy here, there are times when it feels like there are more flies than there shouldn't be.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is whether you're in a restaurant, honestly, or whether you're in a grocery store, or just whether you're outside yourself.
Oh, and
and it's always in the summertime. It's in the hottest parts of the year for some reason.
And I will say one of the things that just blows my mind, you're in the middle of the desert. There's dirt, sand, dry, and an overabundance of mosquitoes.
Oh, yeah.
And it surprises me. You know, we got our back deck and it's shaded. It's really nice. And you can't sit out there without a can of off.
Oh, sorry, man. Well, actually, now that you mention it, scorpions occasionally, yeah. Vinegaroons.
Oh, vinegaroons.
They look like deadly scorpions, but they're actually good guys. You want them in your house, but they scare the crap out of
the
you.
The first time my mother-in-law saw a vinegaroon, she about freaked.
Same here.
Yeah, I mean, it's this nasty black-looking thing that looks like a scorpion and everything. And
it looks like the Ripley Scott, Adrian Barber, the alien.
Yes.
It looks like one of those, but just an inch or two.
Yeah. Oh, so here's an anecdotal story for you on that. I mean, keep in mind, folks, that we are talking about living in a desert where you know, tarantulas and spiders and snakes and reptiles and all sorts of other stuff. That, I mean, this is part and parcel of the life that you have in not just your economic agrarian society, but just the ecology of living here. Okay. I'm out on my bike and this is the August that we move here. So I'm, you know, maybe 2 or 3 weeks into our stay of Roswell. I'm cycling. I'm 2 hours into this particular ride, and I'm coming down Spring River Trail into the culvert that's there right around Washington, I think. Okay. And you go underneath the road and then can come back up, and that's where you cross over to the museum. I suppose this is completely immaterial, and I'm just rambling at this point. But I'm coming in, and my front tire blows, just pops, okay? And so I have to stop, get off the bike, and then I sit down at the underpass where the concrete has a little ledge. And I'm, you know, reaching into my bag to grab my spare pair of shoes because I'm going to have to walk the bike home because I don't have a spare tube and everything. I sat down not more than a hand's breadth width between me and a centipede. And here's this like eight inch centipede, just this.
Ooh.
And it crawled, you know, I sit down. Next thing I know, it's crawling, you know, to my left. And I think to myself, I could have sat on that.
Easily.
And it just, you know, it's a bit of a reminder. And around here, there's, you know, especially in our backyard, there's a lot of black widow spiders. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that you just learn about living in, you know, a particular ecological environment is in this area, watch where you put your hands.
But you're right. When I moved here, I remember a friend of mine that I worked with in a restaurant in Nashville, her parents were somewhere in Arizona. So she was there for Christmas. So I'd only been here a few months, and I remember messaging her, or whatever you did in the 90s with the internet, maybe it was just an email, but I was like, yeah, that's one thing about the Southwest. There's a whole lot more critters here than in Nashville. She's like, oh yeah, definitely.
Yep.
Yeah. She was from Arizona, and yeah, scorpions. I have a good photo of a rattlesnake. Somebody took me out of town, off the interstate on the way to where the Roswell crash sites is. There's a memorial built up there, like a big old tombstone with words etched out on it. They used it in the 1997 UFO Festival, but it's incredibly off-road. You have to have four-wheel drive. It was a long trip to get there, and it was not as the crow flies. Point is, we get out at one point, and I look up. There's a big old rattlesnake in the road, and he just grabs his fishing pole. He's like, "You want to see it coil up? Grab your camera."
Nice.
And he just walks right up to it. But yeah, I mean, there was a terrain fit for sheep. I had lots of pictures of sheep, cactus, and that rattlesnake.
Yeah.
And then again, when you're back into town, it's like, yeah, it's different from Nashville, Seattle. One final nail in that storytelling is, you mentioned the mayor run I was doing. So my younger brother, he wanted to watch the results live. He was like, "Well, where do you go?" And I'm like, he goes, "You know, like when they're giving you the election results, you know, you're watching the news or you're watching your TV show and just coming across the bottom of the screen, you know, the percentages and the votes." And I'm like, number one, what people may find surprising about Roswell is we don't have three channels here of local news or of local programming. You know, you expect anywhere you grow up, you've got we all start out, I think, with ABC, NBC, CBS.
Yep.
Only one, when I moved here in 99, there was a CBS and an evening news that came on, 6 and 10. Now we don't have that, but an NBC affiliate, KOB4. But I just had to tell my brother, I was like, "Well, no, we don't have, it's actually the news is from Albuquerque. And occasionally they mention Roswell, or just because it's regional interest, but it's 3 hours away." So I'm like, number one, no, there's a government website that I can send you to. But he's like, "You don't have the news reporting the results." I'm like, "Well, not live at 7, 8, 9 p.m. at 10. Yeah. So I just said to him, this was by text. I'm like, "Goodbye, City Life." And he replied, "Green Acres, you are there."
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, so the radio station that our buddy, one of my buddies, Thomas, works at.
Yeah.
Mike Winters was doing the reporting live from the courthouse. But you had to listen to the radio to get that feed.
One more that mentions me. A newscaster here mentioning Mike reminded her. She came into a place I had downtown. I did have my own little place for a bit. And she moved here from L.A., I guess we're just going to make this a culture shock episode. But to me, the funniest thing was, well, you just kind of hit it off for a second. You know, tall, pretty blonde, city girl, actually paying me attention. So, wow, you know, we're planning on going somewhere for Sunday lunch. I was like showing her around a little bit. She came in to use the internet. And I had a shop where you would pay $6 an hour to use the internet back when that was a thing.
Yeah, the cyber cafe.
You got it. Yeah.
And, I think there's actually still one off of South Main.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
It'd be good to send someone.
I could be just completely off my rocker, but at least I want to say that there's like a cyber cafe just off of South Main about, I don't know, 3/4 mile to a mile south of Second.
I love that, actually, just knowing. I mean, to me, that's nostalgic. That's almost like an 80s party or something, or a 90s party.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Girl, Jenny, when I wanted to take her somewhere, I was like, okay, she's from Los Angeles and she's here. She's been hired by the local news. So she is like a remote on location giving her stories. That's going to be her job. And she's here to cut her teeth. And eventually she moved to a bigger town in Texas and, you know, got a bigger city to live in to do her news. But what I decided to do was whenever we met her, I picked her up. I went by what is now the visitor's center. And I pulled right. It was a Sunday. I don't think it was open, but I pulled up and I, with my car facing the sign, the visitor center sign, it just had the word visitor center basically with the Zia logo or something like that on. I was like, "So what do you think about that sign, Jenny?" She's like, "It's okay, I guess. It's a really nice sign, don't you think? Wouldn't you say?" She's like, "Yeah, if you say so, I don't get it. So let me tell you why I brought you here." I was like, "Because you're going to be working for the news and you're going to be going out on assignments reporting life in Roswell. I'm just here to tell you that Visitors Center, that a picture of what you're looking at, this sign, Visitors Center gets new sign, was the top banner headline on the front page of the Roswell Daily Record earlier this week before you moved here." And she just like relaxed. She goes, "Oh, I get it." And she realized. So that was me trying to prep her for the culture shock of the kind of news you're going to be reporting on here Like, I remember 100-year-old man finds turtle that he wrote his name on with a knife.
Yeah. Somehow.
You know, was a front page story of the Roswell Daily Record.
That is a very good comment, though, about life here. It's a much slower life. And I've often said, maybe you've even heard me say it, that the desert is just absolutely gorgeous. It is beautiful.
I love it.
But you have to be patient. Because those moments that come and make the desert shine and sparkle are rare. And it's kind of like getting rain in Death Valley in many ways, where Death Valley is just this absolute barren wasteland. It was one of my bucket list items of things to go cool. see. And so when we were moving from Seattle, we actually came through Roswell, visited my parents, and then we ended up over in Omaha in all of that transition. But I wanted to go through Death Valley. It was, you know, one of the things I really wanted to do for a long time. And so we're driving through the heart of Death Valley. We stop, get out. It's like 120 degrees. I mean, it's legitimately the Death Valley that you kind of think of when you think of this thing. And the only remarkable thing about Death Valley is there's absolutely nothing remarkable about it. It's barren, more so than anything that I've ever seen here. And it's not quite as barren as, say, like the Sahara Desert, but I've never personally visited there. So Death Valley is barren. By my standard, it is the quintessential example of the term barren wasteland. It's so bad. You can't even see ants crawling around, you know, like what you would do out here. You go anywhere, mm-hmm. you see ants or something, you know. I remember seeing this little tiny cactus and it looked so pathetic. It was like, oh God, kill me. It was just that. But when Death Valley gets rain, when it does, that rare moment, the whole of Death Valley turns into this massively beautiful wildflower, just reams and reams and reams of wildflowers. And I think that that's a great example of
how... You saw that?
I did not see that.
Oh, but you know that's what it's known for, hey?
Yeah, that's what happens. And, you know, it'll get, I don't know, once out of every 20 years, like just a little bit of water or moisture, and then just boom, it blooms. And it, you can go out and see pictures of it online. It's just gorgeous, right? And so the desert has those moments. And just life in Roswell is a slower life, small town life from that perspective. And so you were talking about your friend from California, right? You know, coming in here, mm-hmm. being a newscaster and stuff, you know, like, yeah, that's big news, a new sign on the visitor center.
It was, especially in 2001 or whenever it was that she was here, that I had to prep her for the culture shock. But you're right. The desert and the Southwest, it has its own desolate beauty as well that is actually awe-inspiring. You said you have to be patient, and you're right in the sense of, I can remember, like, if I go to Aztec, New Mexico, or other travels, you find yourself driving and you're going to run into one of two things, either just this total flatness that is more dirt than greenery. To me, I grew up around hills, valleys, trees, mountains.
Yeah, all same that here. Stuff. Yeah. Growing up in Portland, Oregon, it's lush, green trees, mountains, water that you can look 10 feet down and see the bottom.
Pretty opposite here, hey? We do have trees and places where people or businesses bother to water to go out of their way.
And then, of course, that comes with doves. Lots and lots of doves.
Doves, yes. Good point. But you also get the mountainous, the jagged, it is a desolate beauty situation to where you wind up, even though it's different, once you're acclimated, you have this appreciation for it. It's a low-key awe of, wow, I've never been able to see this far in my life. You can be driving and you can see a thunder and lightning storm happening somewhere else.
Miles away.
And it's dry as a bone where you are, but you can see it in the night sky.
Oh, and you can smell the rain in the air.
You
can smell the rain in the air.
And you can, if you drive north of town, are you aware of every August this thing called the Leonide meteor shower?
No.
It's a worldwide phenomenon. It's not just a Roswell thing. But,
sure.
But the point is, I think the frequency of these meteors that come every so often is less than one per minute. All you got to do is sit there. So it's actually a thing to do. Y'all should do it. I've done it a few times before. You can barely drive 15 minutes out of town. Just go north past mm-hmm. Walmart and all that stuff there. And you will. One thing that I never knew growing up in the city, so to speak. I mean, I was a Boy Scout in a troop that never went camping, honestly. That's
oh wow
city life. We did eventually go to the Camp Boxville in Kentucky thing.
But does that really count?
It doesn't, no, because it's all built for you there, and it's bunks. But
that's glamping.
Yeah. You can leave town here, though. You're 15 minutes away from, there's no light pollution.
Oh, yeah.
You can see the sky. You can see the stars. Uh-huh. It's not like Colorado, if you've ever been to the Colorado Mountains. There, you feel like you're going to touch the stars if you stand up too fast sometimes.
Yeah. So the state of Alabama has the you know, stars shine over Alabama. Now, that's one of their slogans or whatever, right? And I can legitimately say that there's two places on the two places where I've been through where you can seriously see sky. Oh, well, actually three. Like, you've never seen it before. And that's one, seeing the Milky Way and all the stars as if it's just this pristine, just sparkling, magical thing.
I never even believed those were real photos when I was growing up.
Yeah, Alabama, in the middle of nowhere where there's, you know, you can just look up and it's there. And it's just this thick white strike across the sky. And then also in the hills, the foothills of Mount St. Helens, when I was growing up on the Lewis River, we'd go out there and do camping. And then dad had a construction company. And so we would do roofing and stuff for a lot of the mountain cabins in that area. And you look up and there's no light pollution. You just look up and it's just there. And here in Roswell, you know, like you say, you get just outside of town, you know, just not even a 15-minute drive, really.
Probably not. 10 to 20, though, you're...
Yeah.
The city is behind you.
Yep.
And it's a thing. You can lay on your car or bring a chair with you and just stare up at the sky and watch a meteor shower happening to you. That's a thing. It's an annual thing. If people are looking for a reason to come to Roswell, maybe you don't like UFOs, or maybe you can't make it in July, or maybe none of the stuff Will and I would talk about, the performing arts here. We're both involved in that scene that is worth traveling for, I'll say. But you could come for the August Leonide meteor shower.
Yeah, Roswell absolutely is more than dairies and flies. It's more than mosquitoes and scorpions and centipedes and black widows and all of that. But Roswell is more than the UFO phenomenon and the crash of 47. There's a lot more here to this community. And, you know, you mentioned the ability to see the sky, right? I mean, that's just beautiful. One of my, I studied astronomy in college, and being able to look through a telescope without light pollution is something that's just a magical experience. And it's unlike anything,
right?
To be able to legitimately see, like, if you've got a powerful enough scope. And I had some pretty nice equipment when I was in university that I could get access to. The polar caps on Mars. But you can only see that if you don't have the light pollution.
And again, light pollution, that's a word that anybody listening that does live in a bigger city, that's a word that you know the dictionary definition to, but you have not experienced the meaning of light pollution until you're in a place that is without it.
Yeah.
And it's just, you're kind of in a subtle storm of awe.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Beholding nature unfettered or... no trace of mankind.
And one of the cool things that I do find regarding the sky, the night sky specifically, living here in Roswell, even within the city limits, like, I can go out in my backyard at 10 o'clock at night, mm-hmm. and look up, and I can see all the stars.
Yeah.
You can see the constellations and everything. And the Goddard Planetarium does a show basically every night, and they'll walk you through tonight's night sky, when to expect sunrise, sunset, what constellations you can see, about when, and, you know, it's an experience.
And I think they host the Astronomy Club, which actually plans trips out to watch the Leonide meteor shower. It's not even like a thing you have to pay admission. You just, like I said, drive for 20 minutes, take a chair, but you might be able to do it with a group. There's an old missile silo north of town that's got a lot of flat paved area to where you're not as concerned about mm-hmm. the snakes and stuff like that.
Yep.
But it is a wear your boots. That's funny, the stuff that we've talked about, like you said, scorpions and night sky. These are all... I don't think either of us deals with half the stuff we've talked about on a daily basis.
No, not even.
No, the flies or whatever. It's like, it's a come and go phenomena, or, you know, oh, wow, a vinegar rune. Well, they're the good guys. They eat the black widows.
Well, living,
just don't scare them and walk around them. And
Yeah. So living here a year, I've seen two centipedes. The one I almost sat on.
They're scary.
And then the next day, I went out riding my bike again, and I saw, I'm guessing, maybe the same centipede, possibly, being chased by two birds. And those birds were mean. Wow. Like they want, and that scorpion had the tail and the front all curled up, and it was just running around out in the middle of the park trying to get away from these two black birds that were, or the gackle birds, right? But I haven't seen a centipede since. And it's a year later, I haven't seen another one. I've seen one scorpion, and I deal with black widows a lot simply because I've got a shop in the back. And so I've got some wood and things of that nature that, you know, it's just an attraction for that type of critter. But you're absolutely right. You know, living here, you know, we've talked about it. We've made it sound as though it's like this big thing, but you know, they're there. The odds are you never see them. They're just not around, you know, or you know that they're around, but it's like anything else. They're more scared of you than you are of them.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, it's not like that's our everyday fighting with spiders and snakes and scorpions, you think? It's just something that, for that matter, you see occasionally gazelles or antelopes
at certain
edges of town.
Yeah, over there by the aquatic center where I go riding all the time. They're just
North Sycamore,
yep.
That whole thing. Well, one time not quite 20 years of living here, you do occasionally hear the yelps, or you might see a little coyote, okay? So there's predators, you know, so to speak. But that's all very edge of town stuff. Like the areas we're describing, that's not part of our daily routine for work or shopping or anything like that. But Roswell is not so big that, you know, you can spend 5 or 8 minutes driving and you're a little further at the edges of town. One time, speaking of the gazelles or antelopes or whatever they were, that same North Sycamore, that aquatic center on College area, was able to film. I don't know what animal it was chasing those things, but it was like the dust rising from the ground is what caught your eye. So I turned and I pulled my phone up. It's 2015, and I could see like 5 or 6 gazelle antelopes running like bounds and bounds as deer do. And this black something, at least the size of a puma or a mountain lion, chasing them. But whether it was a wolf, whether it was a feral pig, or whether it was a mountain lion or something like that. But again, 20 years, that's one story I have from 20. And again, all this stuff is on the periphery, but it's here.
Yeah. And when you are in the periphery, obviously you're going to see it more often. But here in town, it's, you know, the things that you would be dealing with most is just don't park your car under a tree.
Right.
Okay. So we could go for hours, and we're already an hour-ish into today's interview. So, I think that there's a massive amount left on the table here for just the RCLT conversation.
Yeah.
Unnecessary forest, the board, and kind of, other aspects of that. So why don't we get you back in the studio, in a couple of weeks for, you know, kind of a follow-up or just additional commentary. And then I also know that you've got this book, Come Sail Away With Me, and it's about the UFO phenomenon and everything else that's going on.
It's on Amazon, an average of 5 stars. Come Sail Away With Me, Guy Malone.
And don't forget, you can pick it up at Ancient of Days if you're
Ancients.
In town. Ancients of Days if you're in town. And are you doing a talk this year?
I might. The location, what people don't know is that I have a different view than of the Roswell crash as a man-made historical event. And I do that talk from time to time. And I, too, just like the Roswell Visitor Center, have been on the front page of Roswell Daily Record for my views when I do that talk. I've done it, I think, 4 or 5 times in the last 10 plus years in Roswell. I was planning on doing it during our summer Galacticon, which is the same weekend as the UFO Festival. It all kind of merges together. We're not sure if we have a room at the convention center to do it, but that is the plan, that I'll probably do my Roswell 1947, What Really Happened lecture during this summer.
Excellent.
Perhaps. We'll see.
And so, folks, I've mentioned that, you know, Roswell's more than UFOs. That's clear. We do intend to do a UFO series on this show, and we're going to time it about the mid-June to early July frame. There'll be 3 or 4 episodes going into Roswell's UFO Festival.
Smart.
One of the things that I want to do is have kind of a voice on the street. So we're going to interview some folks while they're coming through town, maybe, you know, right around the central area of the UFO Festival and stuff, just to see, right, the contrast of people who are coming here for the festival, for the UFO experience and all of that, versus maybe some of the folks that are here, you know, like myself, that live here, that do the UFO Festival for fun, but have, you know, the Roswellian attitude towards the tourism and everything else. And so that'll be a very interesting sequence of episodes. And I'll definitely get you back in studio to talk more about your views, how you came to Roswell as a result of the research that you were doing, and what ended up developing in your book.
Right on.
Thank you for coming into the studio, Guy. It's been a fascinating ebb and weave conversation. I've really enjoyed the time with you.
Excellent time. Good host. Good questions.
Well, thank you. Thank you for telling the story. It's, it really does highlight what I want to bring with this show, and that's Roswell's more than UFOs. And there's a unique experience being here in Roswell. And not just from a tourism standpoint, there's more to do than just the UFO Museum downtown. So August, come out, see the meteorites. Come see the Anderson anytime, right? The Jazz Festival. Obviously, that's
in the fall. I think October, honestly.
Yeah. And then, of course, the Roswell Symphony has an upcoming event here in April that I'm wanting, or maybe early May, I'm wanting to get to.
You're right. I've got it on my calendar. 3 or 4 times a year, the Roswell Symphony. 3 or 4 times a year, or really 4, at least 4, the Roswell Community Little Theater. A good 3 or 4, the way off Broadway.
Yep. Yeah. So there's always something going on. And the Liberty's always got traveling
musical
musicians
events. Yeah, they were, the last time I was at the Liberty to see some local friends as the, quote, opening band. You and Olga were there. The headliner band was from Nashville, where I'm from.
Yeah, secondhand sound.
Picture. Yeah, second I took a picture and sent it to my brother. I was, that's funny. That's the second time living in Roswell that I've been able to send my brother pictures of people from Nashville performing here in Roswell. What's up with that?
Yeah, for sure. It's very cool. I know here in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to have Robin Scott on the show. He's a local blues artist. I've talked a little bit about him or dropped his name. I'm hoping to get some others on the show. So stay tuned, folks. And thank you again, Guy, for showing up. And then we'll bring you back in a couple of weeks to talk about our CLT.
Great. Look forward to it.
All right.
Thank you for the opportunity.